This episode is brought to you by America's Rehab Campus. Get on the road to recovery with the best rehab in beautiful Arizona. Dial 1-833-272-7342. That's 1-833-ARC-REHAB.
Ladies and gentlemen, you are now tuned in to the Armchair.
Again, everybody, thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of the R-Cast. My name is Buddha.
My name is Dustin.
I'm Michaela.
We are here today finishing our three-part series on Diving Deeper with your host. So, ladies and gentlemen, give a huge round of applause to my friend, Matt. What it do, Matt? Ooh, hey. All right.
All right.
And that was the show, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so much.
Thank you for coming out.
How you doing, Doc?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. We're doing the air on in this one, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We're going to try it. Man, I don't care. I'm not going to be burning my ass up.
I'm going to be all freezing in here.
Sweaty.
I know.
Episode. I want to be comfy.
Maybe like we should put it to like maybe 70 or a little bit, just a little bit higher. It's going to be cold as shit. It went down a little bit.
Cold as ice. I put my jacket on, got a pillow over me.
Michaela's like right there.
Creating the insulator.
All right. So how's everything going, man? How you been feeling?
It's good. I've been doing all right. You know, just work and home. That's about it.
Yeah.
Hospital, work, home, urgent cares.
Yeah, dude.
Left and right. Same shit. Different day.
All right. So what, you know, this was actually your idea to dive deeper in with the hosts.
Yeah, but I didn't really think about it when I said that shit. Now did I? You know, I just think maybe people want to know a little bit more about who's always on talking besides a guest, right? We never really get a chance. Yeah, we did that Father's Day thing. That was more about a father's perspective from my pops, you know, which was great. But, you know, I mean, if you want to hear some great stories, I'm here to share them, you know?
That's cool. That's good, man. So where are you from, bro?
Originally born outside of Cleveland, Ohio. Little town on the lake called Ashtabula. It's about halfway between Cleveland and the Pennsylvania state line right there on the lake.
Cleveland is the city where we
let's
come
go.
From.
Cleveland used to be a shithole.
Man.
They've made a lot of changes throughout the years, though. It's pretty. They got a really nice downtown set up and stuff like that. But yeah, it was known as a blue collar town, hardworking, stuff like that. But a lot of companies and stuff have kind of shut down over the years. And not near as bad as Detroit, but.
And did you have any siblings growing up?
I did. I had an older brother, 4.5 years older than me. He was my half brother. And then I have a half sister that's 7.5 years younger than me.
Okay.
And, you know, I was born in Ohio, but I didn't spend a lot of time there. Just like on the other show, my dad moved to Florida, you know, late 70s, early 80s. He was an undercover narcotics officer. That's where I got introduced to drugs.
He brought them home.
You know,
how old were you when you guys moved to Florida?
I think it was like three.
Oh, okay.
It might be about 78.
And how many years did you guys stay there?
We stayed there till about 83. He had the largest hit on his head by the Jamaicans.
No shit.
$275,000.
Damn. Holy
so we moved.
Wow. And how old were you at that time?
Well, I was about 7. 8.
So, okay, all right.
So you didn't really know what was going on.
No. I remember, you know, stories that you're told. You know, I'm not like Michaela. I didn't remember when I was born.
You know, the 5 days of agony. Yeah.
No, you know. She had the agony. I know.
You were creating the agony. But I hear stories of, like, I was the first, you know, they had to buy toys at the police station for me because they'd have to go pick me up from my daycare where they seen specific people walking around.
Oh, wow.
So the cops would have to come pick me up and take me to the police station to play with some toys until they came and got me.
Wow. Man, so
that's
your
just
pops
stories I heard. Yeah.
Your pops was like deep in that then. Like,
yeah, he was Miami Vice before Miami Vice.
Wow.
Right? Heat.
Wow. Except he didn't get to drive no fucking Lamborghinis and shit like that.
He didn't wear an open shirt like Don Johnson and shit, no?
I remember one time, I was probably 5, 6, and I remember this. He had an undercover car, and they souped these things up, and it was an old, like, Cutlass. I believe it was a Cutlass 442. Mm-hmm. And he can probably tell you for sure, but I remember him taking me out and running it on the freeway and just, like, hauling ass.
Wow.
I just loved it. I remember That same trip, he got a call, pulled in, and he told me to get between the seat and the dashboard and to stay there no matter what. And I just remember like being stricken with fear that he wasn't going to come back to the car.
Oh, man.
You know, he had to go on some call. But I just remember like sitting there, like not even wanting to breathe because I thought people could see me or hear me breathing, right? Like 5 years old.
Mm-hmm. And did you have, okay, so I mean, you talked a little bit about your dad and you know, being raised with your dad. Did you have your mom around?
No, my mom left when I was like 9 months old. She wanted all the stuff and money. And he just wanted me. So he had to borrow some money from my grandparents to pay her off. And she hit the pay dirt, pavement and left. That's we can talk about that later. Found out I have abandonment issues. I don't know why, but
yeah, wonder, huh?
Yeah.
All right, so man, so you were right, like with your siblings. Were you close with them growing up, or was it just
with my brother? I was pretty close because we were closer in age. My dad remarried when I was about 3 and a half.
Mm-hmm.
So the only mom I really knew, you know, Jamma, we call her now. The grandkids call her Jamma, but. They got married when I was 3 and they got divorced when I was 18. But okay. I still have a relationship with her. She lives in Vegas.
That's good.
She has a relationship with kids and stuff like that. So, but she had my little sister. My older brother, he had a different dad. And I got to see him, you know, whenever. But I always, through life, you know, when I was like in elementary and junior high and high school, I'd have the opportunity to go visit my birth mom, egg donor. Whatever you want to call her. And the only reason why I go is because my brother would be there, you know, but I'd get there and like 3 days later, I'd be calling my dad, can I come home?
How was that, man? Like, you know, cause I mean, being young, not even really understanding that resentment yet being so young and being around her, did you guys try to make a good relationship or were you always a little bit hesitant?
I don't really know. I mean, she, to this day, she still tries to hit me up and stuff like that, but I just have no desire. And I just remember growing up, always thinking that my mom was my mom, not the egg donor mom, but my mom who, you know, I had asthma real bad when I was little, had pneumonia when I was like a year and a half, almost died in the hospital. But my dad would be at work and my stepmom or my mom, I remember her staying up with me all night, you know, patting me on the back, putting the Vicks vapor rub on, you know, giving me my breathing treatments. Like she's my mom, you know, and then I would go visit this woman and I didn't think she even knew who I was.
Wow.
You know what I mean? And as I got older, you know, we moved from Florida to Colorado. My dad was a sheriff there for quite a while. And then moved to Alaska and on junior high and high school. But I remember she'd, you know, call and like want me to come see her. And as you get older, you don't really want to leave your friends and stuff like that. And stuff.
Yeah.
And I just remember thinking, this woman's never seen me play. You know, I was a real good basketball player when I was older. In high school, had a full ride to go to St. Mary's and play.
Oh, shit. That's cool.
But when I was younger and we lived in Colorado, I was a Little League All-Star. Like, I loved baseball from the time I was, like, 2 years old.
Wow.
And but they didn't have baseball when we moved to Dutch Harbor up there in Alaska. So I had to learn a new sport, and I played basketball. But I just remember I remember her thinking, she never seen me play a game. She doesn't really know who I am. She doesn't know my likes, you know. Mm-hmm. The one thing that she did know was I liked these fruit roll-ups and I liked fucking Capri Suns. So when I would go to visit her, that would be in the...
Hell yeah!
Yeah. Right?
Fire. I still love those, man.
Mm-hmm. So I remember, you know, she would have those. And then, you know, one thing that I did love that she did make were these things called gobs. It's like a devil's food cake, two sides, too small, like a cookie.
Yeah.
But it was a cake with this creamy icing inside.
Oh, dang.
So she'd make that. And I think that's what she... associated with she's a good mom because of those couple things, but I never really felt any kind of connection or anything with her.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you said you were closest with your youngest sibling, right?
No, my oldest.
Your oldest. Okay,
my little sister and I, you know, I love her to death, but we were really never close because such a big difference in age. And I got some resentments and things growing up because, you know, I said my dad was always gone for work and stuff. My stepmom, I felt like a dynamic changed once my little sister was born.
Uh-huh.
And I always felt like I was on the outside after that, even though that was my mom and, you know, she nurtured me and did those things. I always felt like she chose her. So it was like I had to do for her. She got, the little sister got her way. My little sister's name is Michelle, by the way. Michelle got her way. you know, I'd have friends over and my mom would be like, let her come in your room. And it's like 7.5 years difference. Like, yeah. What the fuck? You know, so I'm sitting there thinking and, you know, just stupid shit. And I remember one time I put like, make your sister a bowl of cereal. And so I was pissed. And so I made her a bowl of Lucky Charms and I fucking poured lime juice in that bitch or lemon juice in there because it curdles the milk.
Oh, that's horrible.
And then she was sitting there going, this doesn't taste good. And my mom was like, eat it. You wanted to eat it. And made her eat the whole fucking thing. That's like, crazy. You know, but I love my sister and there isn't anything I wouldn't do for her. But that's that kind of growing up and you don't know, you don't appreciate those things when you're at that age, right? Mm-hmm. You know, but
and then you're going through a lot of changes too. I mean, your dad and the type of work that he's in, you know, you said at 7 or 8, you guys had to move from Florida and then go to Colorado and then to Alaska. Like that can't be easy as a young boy who already kind of feels a little bit left out from your parents. And then, you know, you make friends and you have to leave them every few years.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think that really ever affected me. I never had a problem meeting new people and making friends.
Yeah.
I kind of had the problem of like starting over somewhere else. Right. That wasn't ever fun. Mm-hmm. But I value my childhood. I love the fact that we got to live on that island. They filmed Deadliest Catch out there, you know, the crab fishermen.
Oh, that's cool.
There ain't shit out there. We had four-wheelers, and it was like not a single tree on that island because the wind blows 170 miles an hour out there.
They were just getting knocked out. Just
I mean, I remember when we first showed up there, people put straps on the inside of their doors. Because if they open the door and the wind catches it,
rip it off.
You'd see all these people's doors all fucking bent in. It's because the wind would rip them around, you know? So, I mean, it was just cool. We'd have like 50-foot high snow drifts.
What island is this?
It's Dutch Harbor, Unalaska. You know, the Aleutian Island chain that comes down that big arm, like way out in fucking by Russia.
Dang. Is there animals out there too? Like that just withstand that?
Well, I mean, what the fuck, Buddha?
Just being blown in the wind.
Hey, why don't you go up there and fucking figure it out?
It's Australia. It's a penal colony.
That's crazy.
Just all of us criminals.
Mainly wildebeests.
Dude, I've never been anywhere. So like I hear stories like that. I'm like, holy shit, that's crazy.
Well, and then people go, hey, you live in Arizona. It's just fucking sand and cactuses. What's the fucking difference?
Yeah, that's true.
Do you have animals here?
Yeah, they're all dead because of the
Yeah, but I mean, it was fun. I love snowboarding, you know, when we were younger. It was like, we go camping a lot.
That's cool.
Did a lot of hunting, you know, even though I only shot 2 things. You know, I learned I wasn't into killing shit, which is kind of good. I was no Jeffrey Dahmer.
Mm-hmm.
That's good.
You know what I mean? So, I mean, yeah, I'm getting there.
Yeah.
But no, I didn't look at my childhood as like losing out on any of that kind of stuff.
Okay. Right?
My dad, you know, once we moved into Anchorage, he got out of the law enforcement and went into the private security business.
Okay. And how were you in school? Were you a good student?
Yeah, I never took a book home in my life and I had like a 3-point-something. Like if I would have taken a book home and studied, I would have had straight A's, you know, and I look back at it now and it's kind of like, man, why was I so lazy? But I was interested in playing sports. I had to work at an early age. When we were in Colorado, I was 10. My dad taught me some work ethic. His friend owned the truck stop out there coming into town. So every Saturday I went out there and worked for 8 hours and made $1 an hour picking up trash.
Oh, man.
You know, so that was always instilled. If I wanted to play sports in high school, I had to work a minimum of 20 hours a week, you know, have a job. And, you know, that's where my work ethic and stuff comes from. So I find that to be very hard to find nowadays.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. You know,
everybody wants to do as little as possible and make as much money as possible.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So just play the fucking lotto.
Yeah.
did you see a lot of differences, you know, being raised? Because, I mean, for me, for example, listening to your story, it's very rare, at least in my lifetime, where I've seen where the dad is the one who is in charge. It's mostly like a woman state, especially here in Arizona, you know?
Yeah, and, you know, I saw that a lot growing up. I saw a lot of my buddies, they were real close with their moms. And then we go to the house, you know, when their moms was like the caretaker and shit. And the dad would be in some other room and we'd leave and they wouldn't say bye to their dads, you know, shit like that. That didn't happen in my house. It was like, anytime I left, my dad's like, all right, love you, son. I'm like, love you too. Like,
yeah,
wasn't a lot of like, I was never held and coddled as a kid, but I definitely knew I was loved, especially from my dad's side. So that kind of shit I struggle with later in life, and I even struggle with it today. You know, you can ask my wife and my kids. I'm not a big lovey-dovey type of person, right? But I will say I love you and things like that, but for the most part, I'm like the one-arm hug fucking, you know, pat on the back shit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Not a cuddler.
Is your dad kind of the same way? Pretty tough, like a Brillo pad? Just
my dad is actually the opposite. He's very lovey.
Is he?
I always see him very, very kind and very, you know, hugging his wife and, you know, just throughout the years.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. Very gentle, very monotone, real quiet. But yet he has that switch that...
Flip it.
Yep.
All right. And so like, you know, growing up, you were a pretty good kid then, you know?
Yeah, I really didn't get into a lot of trouble until, you know, I did a couple of things. I remember we were living out on that island and I was like 13 and there was a rec center and me and a couple of the other kids were drinking and smoking a little weed and we started drawing on the outside of that building. And instead of me putting an alias, I put my fucking name. And my dad was the chief of police out there and stuff. So that didn't bode too well. I mean, I never got my ass whooped, which I think in the episode with my dad, I always told him, you know, I wish I would have just gotten my ass whooped or punched in the face instead of hearing the fucking I'm disappointed talks from Mr. Shetler.
Because
that shit hurt. At least the bruises and shit would heal.
Yeah.
Those words and stuff like that are the worst.
Get you in the gut. Yeah.
You know.
So when do you feel your life started changing directions, like when you started getting into more trouble?
So in high school, you know, I was, you know, a good student. I was at school all the time. I never had a problem having friends. I did a lot of extracurricular stuff, but we started drinking on the weekends. You know, that was the whole week. You're just waiting for Friday to come to go out and get a couple Mad Dog 20s. And, you know, some malt liquor and some Mickey Big Mouse and shit like that,
Shit you drink when you're young, too.
Yeah, it tastes like dog shit.
Dude, some Edward 40 hands.
My wife and I were just talking about, remember, like, the Incredible Hulk, like the Hennessy and LSA and all that shit. Like, oh, that's so horrible that people would even drink that.
Yeah, I remember the girls in high school used to buy Boone's Farm.
Oh, my God.
Wine, and they would drink it with a straw because they said, it gets you fucked up more if you drink it with a straw.
It's because you can drink it faster.
The Barnables and James, or what are those stupid wine coolers called?
Yeah,
Barnaby and James. Yeah, I remember they came out with Zimas, and I was in high school, and we'd go to parties, and we'd leave the Zima in the truck and go out to the truck and drink a couple of those and take the beer in with us. Because you know? We don't want to be seen carrying around Zima because that shit was not cool.
That's funny, man. I used to have to steal the Zimas from... my brother's girlfriends when they came through with the house and stuff, because if I took his beer, he knew.
But so. I think things started changing. Like, I didn't know really why I felt the way I did, you know, those abandonment issues.
Yeah.
But I remember when I was drinking, I thought I was lots of fun.
Yeah.
And I didn't think about stuff, you know, and I wasn't into hard drugs or anything because, let me kind of step back. We lived in Colorado, you know, in the 80s there, it was the DARE movement, remember?
Yeah.
They were saying, you know, it's okay to say no to drugs and blah, blah, blah. Well, I was in elementary and I remember I used to have to walk through this park to get back home. And it was always loaded with, I don't know the correct terminology for this right now, but the American Indians,
there was
a Ute Mountain tribe. Indigenous people, whatever they, you know, it is now, they were always drunk there, drinking Aquanet and stuff like that. And I was always so afraid that little walk home that someone was going to make me take drugs.
Oh, man.
You know, and then how things change later on.
You're like, I hope someone stops.
It's because it's what they talk about.
Now I go walk through parks all the time.
Like, anyone got any drugs?
Yeah.
Is that Aquanet, homie?
What's that? Anybody need seats?
Oh, crazy.
But in high school, you know, we dabbled with marijuana. Of course, a lot of drinking. It was a lot of acid, a lot of mushrooms.
Dang.
And then when I was like 16, I got introduced to cocaine. And, you know, we talk about, having all that prior stuff. Now, growing up, my dad always used to tell me, you know, drugs, well, you're going to be working. You're going to be asking somebody, you want fries with that, you know? You're going to limit what you can do for work. You're going to limit your potential, your ceiling. You know, you could damage your brain. You know, and I didn't think about it. Someone whipped out a bag of coke and started cutting up lines, and I just did it. And I felt good.
There was never that fear of like that voice in the back of your head of your dad, you shouldn't be doing this, nothing like that.
No, nope. No. I mean, the fear was, of course, a little bit of, I hope I don't get caught so I disappoint him.
Yeah.
But other than that, none of that other fear, you know, and I think we talk about decisions, right, and choices. And my dad could lay out, I remember he was telling me a story one time, son, you're going to come to this fork in the road. If you go right, you're going to have no issues. You'll be taken care of monetarily. You'll have a great life, great family. Everybody will be safe, like all this. But if you go left, your life's going to be shambles and all this. So I'd get to the fork in the road, and I always went left. Because then I would sit there and go, whoa, what the fuck's he know? You know, and it, looking back now, I'm just like, man, I could have made my life so much easier. But fact of the matter is, all the hardships, along with all the good, make me the person who I am today sitting here. So I wouldn't change any of the shit I've done, good or bad. You know, I could have had a lot of less heartache and consequences and things like that if I would have just listened, but that wasn't in my book.
And what do you think made you rebellious like that? You know, you talk about how your dad was very nurturing and loving, and, you know, especially living with him in the occupation that he has, you know, and then like being able to go against that, you know, do you feel like it was the resentment to your mom that you didn't realize was allowed you to
do
that?
Yeah, I think, you know, looking back and stuff and over the years, kind of working through some stuff, that it most definitely started from the fact of that abandonment issue that I didn't know I had, you know, never feeling like, because again, we're talking, she left at 9 months, and then my stepmom had my little sister, and then I felt again left from her.
Yeah.
Right? And then every relationship I've ever had, you know, when I was in, you know, high school or whatever, thinking, well, they're going to leave anytime now, so I might as well just be done and blow it up and move on. You know, so when I used, I didn't have to think about that. I don't think I ever felt like I was good enough for this person to stay.
Yeah.
Especially from a female. If your own mom's going to leave you, which that shit don't happen. You look, I mean, Animal Kingdom, I love Discovery Channel and watch all these animals and the way humans are supposed to be, like, yep. Women are more nurturing and they don't leave, you know, that's not fucking normal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Not normal, you know? So being able to numb that, you know, I really didn't get into trouble in high school, like I said. And I dabbled with a lot of drugs. When I was 19, my brother passed away.
This is your older brother.
Yep. And that is when shit just went out the window. I don't think I knew how to handle that or deal with that. Yeah. And I'm more like, I just shut up and don't talk about it. I remember being at his funeral carrying his casket and everybody else was crying. I didn't shed a tear. But inside, I felt like shit. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's another thing, too, of like, I don't ever want to show emotion.
Yeah.
My wife tells me now, it's like I'm a flat affect or some shit. Like, I'm very just this, you know, and sometimes I don't realize it.
Yeah.
But that was my coping mechanism, right? You're not going to know how I feel inside. You're just going to see what's on the outside. And I think over the years, too, I've created this persona, and I used to, you know, we're just joking about having a shirt that says no new friends because I fucking don't like people. That's not true. I love people, but I hate getting approached by people, you know, and it's kind of like I put myself out there the way I want to look of like, don't fucking talk to me kind of, you know, was what I did. And after my brother passed away, it just went, you know, the drug use and shit just went downhill. Okay. It went everyday use.
Were you using with your brother and stuff? Did you guys party together?
One time. The last time I hung out with him. And my brother, he was a professional skateboarder. He also mixed music, like back the old school way. He used to always make me these mixed cassettes.
Oh, shit. That's cool.
You know, and he did, he actually played at this, two of these clubs in Houston. And they have a gay district down there. And he took me with him. I was 18, you know, the last time. And, he played and everything, and one of his friends had some coke, and so we did some coke together and went back to my mom's house and my birth mom's house and played Monopoly. Was one of my last, you know, memories of my brother. But he wasn't an addict or anything, and he barely drank. He did a little bit of coke that night, and that was the only time he had ever talked about drugs or anything, and I've ever seen him do anything besides have a couple drinks.
All right. So, I mean, when that happened, I could imagine, I mean, it's hard. I mean, was it very similar, like, with your pops? Did he try and, like, his best to try and console you and make you feel better? Or was he kind of shut off as well, too? Because, I mean...
My dad, when he passed?
Yeah.
Well, it wasn't his son, but he still had a connection to him. You know, my dad likes to sit down and discuss.
Okay.
And I didn't really want to have any part. you know?
Yeah.
I remember, you know, it was like 6 months later, I was in Ohio. My brother was in Ohio visiting his dad because he lived in Ashtabula where I was born. And I have a couple uncles that live in Ohio that I was out with. My brother called me and wanted to go hang out because he was going on this. He was going to Ohio State at the time, and he was going to be a geologist. And they were going on this dig in Tibet, that highest mountain. I forgot the name of it. And I was like, nah, I'm good. I'm going to stay here because I knew he didn't want to drink a party, but my uncles were.
Yeah.
And so I chose to fucking stay with them. And then my brother left. And then the next time I saw him, he was in a coma and didn't come out of it. So he caught some elevation sickness on the climb. He kept this journal the whole time. He was brought into this hospital in Tibet where he said they'd open the doors and the windows. All these wild animals would come through during the middle of the night.
Wow.
And there's like 6 known cases at the time of this virus that just eat your lungs away and they can't stop it. 2 months later, he was dead.
Man,
that's crazy.
That's horrible.
And it was all specifically related to as a result of the hike.
Yeah.
Or complications from like
the
elevation and stuff.
And like, then getting put in that hospital and he caught some virus in that hospital.
Okay. So, okay.
Yeah, because the animals would come into the hospital and stuff, too, just running.
Oh, so they're saying it was from the animals and shit, like just maybe like contaminated. That's what they said, or then.
This is like, geez. What, 97?
Yeah.
Wow. Sure. Okay, so how long during that time, Matt, like do you feel, because I'm sure even a lot of that is probably even a blur. You know, we go through this trauma and a lot of stuff that we block out. How many years after your brother passed away were you like out of control?
Till I was 30.
Till 30?
30, 31.
About 12 years.
Some people say I'm still out of control. I don't see it that way. Yeah. Like heavy using. You know, after that, I just kind of shut shit out. I started working at 19 for this company, Armored Transport, where I did IT work for them. And I worked for them for 14 years. I remember, you know, just constantly using the whole time I worked. But obviously, I was a good employee. They figured something out back in 2004, made me go to treatment, gave me 6 months off, and then had a handler for like a year.
That's,
me around.
Those are those armored trucks, right?
Yep. That say guard on the side now.
Yeah. Yep. You know, and I think about that too, man. You must have been a hell of a worker. You talk about the work ethic earlier that was instilled in you for them to go out of their way to help you like that.
And I traveled the lower 48 doing 18 new builds for them a year. You know, and so I'd be on site at a building for 3 weeks, 2-3 weeks at a time. I also did special projects. We rolled out a voice over IP project where we had to hit, I think they had like 278 buildings at the time, go in and change out their routers and their phone system, all that shit to voice over IP, what we know of now with Cisco. And I mean, I would be gone for, on the norm, 3 weeks out of the month, I was gone. Wow. But there was times where I was gone for 3 months, 4 months at a time.
Were there periods during that time where you were sober or were you using the entire time?
The only time I was sober is when I'd sleep from being up on meth for a week or 2 weeks. I'd sleep for a few days.
Okay.
You know, and then as soon as I woke up, I was back using. Meth was my go-to at the end of the run there.
Yeah.
Cocaine lasts good, you know, half hour. Meth lasts you a couple of days.
Yeah.
Wow. So like I know you said like with your brother passing that you were able to shut down your emotions and not really show anything. Mm-hmm. Was it easy for you to kind of disregard the fact that you were kind of losing yourself a little bit there? Did you even see it as that, or were you just shut off to yourself and how you felt completely and everything?
Just shut off how I felt completely.
Completely.
You know, and I mean, I had a couple young kids at the time too. You know, my oldest is 24, my son he'll be 21 in August, so you know, when I originally got sober the first time, my daughter would have been 5 and he was 3-2. Okay.
So,
you know, and that didn't deter me from not using.
Were you married or anything like that during those times? No.
I was with their mom, whatever. I wasn't like, I was not a good partner. I wasn't a good dad. I wasn't a good son. I wasn't a good person. You know, I tell my wife all the time now, like, look, all these other women got the worst me. You get the best me.
Yeah.
You know?
Heck yeah.
At least that's how I put it, you know? And I try to be a better person than I am today than I was yesterday. Okay. That's all we can do. I'm nothing what I used to be. We are not our past is what I learned. And over time, like reading books and working on myself and going to a psychiatrist or a counselor, whatever you want to call them, finally figuring out some stuff and figuring out why I did the things I did or why I acted the way I did, you know, why I felt the way I felt. There's more feelings than just anger and excitement, right? And happiness. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was either angry because I wasn't getting my dope, or I was excited as hell because I just got it put in my hand.
Yeah.
You know, there was no other feelings that were out there. Just lots of life lessons, you know.
So, okay. So, you know, you said from the moment, you know, that everything happened with your brother to when you got sober, it was just a long process of feeling lost with the situation that you felt with your mom and then everything with your brother. When did recovery start coming into play for you? What was there a situation or something that happened that made you really question what you had been doing?
No, I got in trouble.
Yeah?
Yeah. I remember specifically I'd been on a run for I don't even know how long. Raina Rule's mom and them were all in Colorado. I was back from work by myself. And I remember coming to on the couch and one of my buddies was there, Rule, Big Rule. And he's like, we're talking. And I'm like, kind of coming out of it. And I'm like, what are you doing here? And he goes, well, your dad called me and asked me to come over and make sure you're all right. And I'm like, well, what happened? He's like, well, apparently he called you. You told him you were in Mexico getting ready to play in your band and weren't making a whole lot of sense.
You said Mexico. I didn't know if I had to pull out the donkey.
That's Tijuana.
So my dad was like, you know, I know you're smoking crack. And he was overseas at this time. Every time I got arrested and in bad trouble, like he was always overseas, it seems like. Every time he goes out now even, he's like, hey, everything's going to be okay. I'm going over to Italy, you know.
Yeah.
I'm going to get a call, you know, shit like that. But and then he made me go to... They took me out to the Meadows. Our insurance just changed. And it was just, you know, one of those weird things. And then the work stuff surfaced and ended up going to Banner and doing their IOP and stayed sober for like 90 days. And then got a sponsor and the sponsor was using. So I started using again, you know, like all this weird shit. And it was my first, they were telling me to go to AA. And I was like, what do I want to go? It's just a bunch of old, what you see on TV, a bunch of old dudes smoking cigarettes and shit, which mm-hmm. It wasn't, you know. So that was my first taste. And I really didn't think I needed it. I just thought I could just separate a little bit and then not continue. But I still had those things nagging inside, right? Those things tugging at those strings.
You hadn't really identified them.
No.
Really at that point.
Uh-uh. You know, and I mean, I 150% despised the person I was. And I think I've shared this before of for years, I couldn't brush my teeth looking in the mirror because I hated that person so bad. Man. So I feel like I lived my life like I didn't care if I walked out in front of a bus or got shot in a fucking shooting. A sad way to look at it, but
yeah.
You know, my dad always says, son, it's like, you're like four cats. You've spent like 30 some lives already.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, but I didn't care.
Yeah.
I didn't like me.
It's amazing, you know, what trauma, the things that we experience at young ages, you know, any type of abuse or neglect, what it does and how when you grow up, it like manifests into different things.
And you know, when I started talking about it in the beginning, like, years ago when I started diving into that part, I could just remember sitting there just thinking to myself when I would tell this therapist this shit, I'm a fucking pussy. Really? This is disrupting me? Like, who the fuck cares? Yeah. Like, that's what my mind would sit there and tell me. And then I would come the next session and not say shit.
Yeah.
You know, and it was just like my mind loves to lie to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my heart tells me the truth. My mind likes to fuck with me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not good enough. I don't weigh enough. I'm not as good looking as this person. I'm a horrible dad. I'm a shitty husband. I'm a crappy son. I'm a shitty coworker. You know, just like over. And it still happens today. You know, I struggle with a lot of like guilt and shame, especially when it comes to my kids.
Yeah.
You know, and it's your mind, like my mind is a fucking horrible place to be.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting too, because you think about when you really, I mean, I'm sure your bosses, for them to help you the way that they did when you were working for them, you must have been an amazing employee. They must have cared about you deeply for them to go out of their way. And then you hear about your dad, even to this day, being concerned. All I could think about is being away from my kids, especially overseas or somewhere where I can't get to them. It must have been a terrifying feeling. So even though you know you have people who love you, even though you know you're valued and people, you know, it's...
But it doesn't matter that all these other people are telling you that
if you don't believe it yourself, right?
Because yeah. To this day, I don't like pats on the back. I don't like being told good job. Yeah. I don't, you know, because I'm just like, for some reason, it's just weird. I don't like opening presents in front of people. I can't.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, it's very hard for me for a lot of simple things, you know, that it's just weird when you think about it, you know, and I can tell myself something and I can start believing it in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
My dad can tell me how great I'm doing and how proud he is. And I'm just like, in one ear, out the other. Mm-hmm. I'm just like, oh, well, I hope the time comes where I don't disappoint again. That's what I'm worried about. You know what I mean? Just weird thoughts, weird how the mind works and what it does to people. And I feel bad because I feel like I'm not alone. There's a lot of people that sit there and struggle with that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think using drugs and alcohol and everything else, everything you can put in your system that takes you to a different feeling, a better feeling, because you feel so shitty inside. It's very hard to stop that because you're still left with dealing with the stuff, right? Yeah. But what I've learned is that I got to deal with the shit to get it fixed, right? Because otherwise you're just sweeping it on the rug, and it's always going to be there.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just like, even today, it's like I can carry so much shit with me, but eventually I break at some point.
Yeah.
Everybody has a breaking point. And especially when it comes to things that are in our mind, like in workout classes and stuff, you hear them say, your mind is a muscle, like use it, but it is. And like the things that you practice and do over and over and over again, or tell yourself over and over and over again, you start to believe it, even if it's not true.
Yeah. You know, it's just like, you know, Navy SEALs. I was watching these shows on Navy SEALs when my son and son-in-law went into the Navy, right? And I'm like, man, these guys push their bodies past the brink of exhaustion and still go because it's all in their mind, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I stopped playing like sports a couple of years ago because my mind used to tell me, oh, you can still play. You can still do this. My body's like, fuck no.
Stop it.
I get hurt every time I go out, you know, and it's just weird, the power of the mind.
Yeah.
You know, and that's where all this addiction and shit sits, you know, is our mind.
It's crazy, man. And I mean, and I hope you don't mind me bringing this up, but you know, the episode we just talked about dropped today was the episode with Zane.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you said that, you know, that was your second right into treatment, right? Was when you had connected with Zane.
Yeah.
You dabbled pretty deep into a certain situation in your life where you were at the lowest, at the rock bottom, right?
Yeah, where I strung it up and was going to hang myself at the house I was living at.
And I know, you know, listening to that episode, if you guys haven't had a chance, go back and listen to Zane's episode. It's incredible, man. He's a good dude. You know, there was a moment there, you know, when you were talking about how Zane had rescued you and you know, you guys are just, it's just a friendship and it's amazing being around that community and those friends that you were able to make during that time.
Mm-hmm.
What was that big change for you, Matt? Like, what really made you start seeing things differently? Because I mean, to be at that lowest part of your life and then without even Zane realizing that he's pulling you from it, you know?
Yeah. I think the big changing part for me was going to that CA convention at the Biltmore that weekend and staying the whole time. And the first like day I was just like, I should just get back and finish it and da da da. And I went to a lot of like little seminars that were based on like how you view yourself. It was just weird how shit lines up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. Like it seemed like everything I walked into was pointing at what I was struggling with at that point. And then after I got through that weekend, I started thinking about my kids and about like, I just need to push forward. Like, so many people have it way worse than I do, you know, and things like that. And it wasn't like some huge shot from God or whatever someone wants to call it. It was just me paying attention in the moment for once.
Yeah. It was just enough to get you on to the next day or the next hour. Like, right. Cause at that point, like, that's all you're thinking about. And you, like, unless you can get your mind off of that, you know, and so.
Yeah, because for years I used to just think that everybody'd be better off without me.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm just a burden. If your mother can just leave and whatever, then maybe I'm not wanted.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be missed. There's only going to be 6 people show up at my funeral. Like, start thinking about, hey, who would show up at my funeral? Stupid shit like that.
Battle of the mind, man. You know that.
Well, your mind will fuck you left and right.
Yeah, absolutely.
With sand. Lube.
Fucking
sandpaper.
Sandpaper. Have you seen the movie A Man Called Otto?
Is that the new one with
Tom Hanks?
Tom Hanks? I have not.
There's a very similar situation in there, man. And it's just, it's so interesting to me, you know, because we've talked. I know that you have. You're not like a big faithful person or anything like that. Like, I
mean,
know,
faithful.
Like,
faithful,
like you don't have like a.
I'm faithful out of my wife. Is it? What do you?
No,
saying?
No. Not like that.
Use different language.
Okay, no.
Religious.
Yeah, like you're not a big like a religious type of a person, you know. But it's so interesting to me to like to hear that story from an outsider's perspective and know that you were at that lowest. You know, like you had already made those plans to do that. And then you go with Zane and you go with Dustin and your friends. And it's like there's that fucking letter being pointed at you. Like everywhere you go, it's like this is being spoken to you specifically, yeah. You know. Did your thought process on that change too? Like as you got older, like do you feel?
I'm not a very religious person.
Yeah.
Right. Like I'm not going to sit here and say I am. I have read a lot of stuff on different religions. I have. Read the Bible a couple different times, tried to interpret things differently. Church was like, we're talking about it, Michaela's, you know, she didn't like Sundays when she was a kid. That just followed me. I remember Sundays sitting in church, not wanting to be there, falling asleep, and my stepmom would grab the back of my hair and pull my hair, pinch me real hard, you know, and just, I fucking hated it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Hated it, you know, and then I just thought, like, I, you know, if there is a God, why does he let all this shit happen to people? See all the crap that's going on in the world? Even growing up then, you know, there was always food, you know, people, kids not eating,
yeah.
You know, it makes me sick to my stomach when I see people suffering, you know, or people that are born with, you know, mental disabilities, right? You know, I just feel horrible. Like, how do you let this happen?
Mm-hmm.
If you can change this and make all these other things great, why in the hell would you make things like this?
Mm-hmm.
That's the way I used to think, you know, and sometimes I still think that way.
Yeah.
You know, but do I think there's something greater than ourselves? Of course I do. What that is, I don't know. But what I do know is that certain times, certain things get shown to me, but maybe it's the fact that I'm ready to open my mind to see things that have always been there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And maybe it wasn't, you know, God focusing on me that weekend, keeping me alive.
Yeah.
Because he lets a lot of people kill themselves. Right. You know, so I'm just more open to different things. And if you believe in a guy with a beard, because beards are sexy, sitting in the clouds, dictating stuff and everything else, and it's making you be the good person you are, Buddha, and making you be who you are, Michaela, then I'm all for it.
Yeah.
Just because I don't feel that way doesn't mean that I don't like to hear you talk about what makes you tick and what makes you happy. And I wish sometimes I could feel that way, but I just don't.
Mm.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't matter what makes you better. I'm happy for those people that actually have something and they use something to make themselves better.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that's my.
And I think that's the beauty of it being a choice. Mm-hmm. You know, like it's what. It doesn't work the same for everyone.
Yeah.
You know, some people read their Bible in the morning. Some people read their Bible at night. Some people don't read the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
It's that the act isn't what makes you the good person. It's what you put into play from whatever it is that you're doing.
Yeah.
It's, you know, I, if we want my view on what religion was probably put out there. This is how I feel, to make us be more kind to each other, to give us rules, to give us guidelines to live by, which I'm all for. You know, thou shalt not steal. I mean, these Ten Commandments and things are all are like a guideline on how to be a good person, right?
Yeah.
So for whatever reason, people have different perceptions, because that's all it is a perception. Everybody's thing, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Just because I don't believe something that you believe doesn't make me a bad person, and vice versa.
Yeah.
You know, it's the getting shit rammed down your throat constantly, or you're going to go to hell. And that scared me as a kid. You're going to go to hell if you don't think this way.
Yeah.
Like that kind of stuff. I'm like, well, we talk about freedom of choice, but yet you're going to tell us if we, this is what you're supposed to do. And if you don't do it, you're going to hell.
Mm-hmm.
Well, fuck, I'm already in hell.
Yeah. You know?
It feels that way sometimes, you know?
Yeah.
But,
and I mean, I guess like for me, it's, you know, and I know you said that you're not a big fan of like pats on the back or whatever, bro, but I'm gonna fucking say this, dude, because you're my dude, okay? But it's like, you know, I look at someone's life like that, the way that you experienced it, the hardships and the troubles that you went through, and then working here, coming to a facility like this, and, you know, the fentanyl epidemic and how so many people are losing their lives and they need that compassion and that love from another human being. I mean, it's like to see and hear where you were at that point, and then to know that you're in a position now where you're able to help people that was that's going through that exact same darkness that you were experiencing. Like, to me, that's such a special thing, bro. Like, we if had you not been here, that light, you know what I mean? Your light would not be here to shine on everyone else. So to me, it's just, it's a special thing, you know?
It I mean, it is for me, what it does is it helps me feel good about myself helping people now. Right.
Yeah.
Like, it's a selfish act, but it's a selfless act.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say that I don't get anything out of helping people, because I do. What it does is it brings me happiness.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's what I figured out. Right. Mm-hmm. And I'd rather do something that brings me happiness than do something that brings me pain.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I've always said, you know, hey, these people come in, they're not on winning streaks. We weren't on winning streaks when we went to treatment and tried to make changes and stuff like that. And they need to be able to relate to us. Right. Mm-hmm. And that's why you'll never catch me in a suit and tie at work. Like they're not going to come over and think the guy at the suit and tie is going to relate to what I was just doing on the street.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right. They're going to go to the guy with the tattoos like Buddha, or they're not going to go to Dustin because
of the comb over.
Cause he looks like one of those weasels that stand on the dirt hills.
Prairie dog.
What are those?
Prairie dog muskrats.
Muskrat, yeah. That's it. They're going to go to somebody that looks like they've been through some shit, who they can relate to. And so that's why I suit up and show up here and just be me. And whoever wants to approach, and my door is always open, and I'm always willing to talk and listen and share, you know, whatever it is. If I got to just listen, or if they want some feedback, or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, and just being available. And for employees too.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, when you go back to that moment when you started, you know, finding your recovery and think, did you ever think you would ever work in a facility like this? What did you do after that?
No. So, you know, I continued to work in the IT world for a while. Then 2008 or 2009, the company I worked for sold to a public owned company. They didn't believe in traveling IT, so they laid us off.
Wow.
And then I went and took the contractor's license for a commercial residential dual license, K67 it was at the time, for low voltage cabling that I was going to do. And I passed it and started a small company. And then shit just kind of fell apart because I ended up, I was getting shots, those shots in the back of your neck.
Cortisone or whatever?
Yeah, because I had some bad neck problems, and he hit me, partially paralyzed me on the left side. I was on a cane for a year and a half.
Damn.
And that's when I started using pain meds, you know, which I didn't realize. I took these pain meds for like 6 months, not how I was supposed to. I was, snorting them and chewing them up. And
I wasn't on the label, bro?
No. My buddy's like, hey, don't you use a pipe clamp on that OC-80? And I'm like, what do you mean, bro? Like,
wow.
You know, and I was taking, supposed to take two 80s a day, two Dilaudid pills a day, and then like no more than six or eight of the, you know, Narcos a day. And I was taking 18 of the OC-80s a day, 30 to 40 of the Dilaudid a day, and chewing up the Narcos like Pez, like 60 to 80 of those a day.
But you had stopped with the G at this point, right? You weren't using
that. Yeah, anymore. I wasn't using the meth or anything like that. I was just using the pain pills on a cane. And then I just stopped cold turkey because I'm like, I'm tired of feeling like crap. And then I had a withdrawal seizure.
Did you go back to
that's when I went back into treatment.
Oh, okay. That was the second time?
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I was like, why would anybody do this shit all the time? The heroin, pain pills, you know?
Yeah.
Because you got withdrawals after. I mean, meth, I just slept for a couple of days and wake up hungry and fucking thirsty.
You know? Go again for 2 days and sleep 2 days? Man.
So it was just, you know, did that. And then once I got into treatment again, lived in sober living for like 90 days. That's where I met Zane and them. And then moved into a house with three other guys and started working. I was working. My sponsor at the time said, you know, you're not humble and you got too much of an ego, blah, blah, blah. I want you to go see my friend at Fry's. I went there and he said, oh, you're going to be pushing grocery carts and bagging groceries for 3 months. So I started making $7.25 an hour. And I did that for 6 months.
Were you reluctant to go?
Yeah, but that was the greatest job I've ever fucking had in my life.
That's cool.
I fucking loved it. You know, and I was definitely afraid of mentally handicapped people. And those are a lot of the people that bag groceries and stuff. And so it gave me an opportunity to kind of get a little easier with that. And then, you know, I just remember like the second week, the manager of the store is like, you need to leave some of the carts out for the other people. Stop doing everything. About a week after that, he's like, hey, do you want to be our manager of our produce department? I'm like, I can't. I got to do this for.
Wow.
You know, so it was like, and I did that, and it was the greatest job I ever had.
Yeah.
Sucked money-wise because there was lots of times throughout the week I wouldn't eat. I'd find these meetings that have food, and I would save my money because I'd have my kids every other weekend. So I'd save my money up, and I maybe get one meal a day. If I could find a meeting that served food, that way I had that money stacked up to be able to take them to the movies, Dave and Buster's, go-karts, all that shit, you know, and that time
that stuff
was
adds up quick.
was like, I just remember I like loved my job. There was like no stress, no headaches. And if I could go back and do that now, I would, to be honest.
When you leave, you leave, it's truly time off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and, so I did that for that 6 months, and then I started working into recovery.
Okay.
In 2013.
What made you want to be involved in that, just all your experiences?
Oh, my best boy, Nate, he was working at recovery. I was like, hey, can I get a job over there as house manager or something?
Okay.
So I started a house manager at a Better Today, and then about a couple months after, they wanted me to start their transportation department. I did that, and then when I got fired there, I was the manager of the recovery community. After that, I got a job working at a company who had a contract with APS.
Okay.
That's the main power, you know, shit up north there in Phoenix and Scottsdale in there. And I was splicing fiber and doing stuff for about a year and a half, 2 years. And then I got back working in recovery because that's bullshit work. It's 130 degrees out there in those dirt, you know, big old centers they have, and you're in fire retardant clothing and hard hats and trying to splice fiber. It's a nightmare.
It's like, it sounds cool because it's like I like tech and like the internet, but it's like, yeah, you're not using it. You're just laying the shit out underground, putting it in buildings. And
I wasn't making a lot of money at that time because right when I started that job, I got hired on. I got arrested and was...
Oh no! Wait, here we go.
For the fourth or fifth time, after I got out, I was facing six felonies, and they're like, "Well, if you want to work here, we're gonna knock you down to this." So they took quite a bit of money away from me, but I wasn't getting another job.
Yeah,
and so I worked there and did that, and you know, I could have got off. I fought that court stuff. The only people that saw anything were at an Airbnb, and they're from Sweden, and they couldn't get a hold of them.
Oh, man.
So on the last day, I remember my first day in court, they're like, we're going to, it was my first day for the cases that I caught. So it was about 6 months after I had got arrested, and I went to court with my lawyer, and they're like, here's the plea deal, 12 years, this, this, and this. And if you don't accept it, we're going to come down with the hammer of justice on you. My attorney's like, no, we're not taking it. I'm like, well,
yo, bro, are you sure?
What's the hammer of justice going to be? 12 years is the best I'm going to get, you know?
You're like, hammer of justice sounds scary.
Yeah, I know. Your lawyer's like, nah, bro, we're not taking that shit.
About a year and a half later, you know, I show up to court. It was supposed to be the actual court. And they're like, hey, the people won't show. They didn't get a hold of them. I'm like, well, I need a consequence. Because before, my dad's usually got me out of all my shit, but he was out of all his favors from his, all his contacts have retired and moved on. So he's like, you're on your own with this one. He paid for my attorney. He paid my $15,000 bond.
Damn.
But he said, you're on your own with this one. And then, so I just said, hey, I need some consequences. And I'm going to plead to this, this, and this. And if they're going to give you probation, supervised probation. And then if you complete, then the felony will drop off. Right? So my stupid ass took it. But I felt at the time I needed some sort of consequence, right? And so I had for a year and a half somebody tell me when I had to be home, somebody showing up, keeping track, and making me be accountable for where I was and where what I was doing. And I to this day, I feel it's a good decision that I did that. Some people say stupid. I even sometimes think that. But it was what I needed at that time, right?
Yeah. You know, so after that, right, were you pretty solid after that? Like, after that, you didn't get into any more trouble? You were sober?
Yeah, I haven't been arrested since.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
That's good.
No. Well, I got one speeding ticket.
Okay. Hey, that's fine, man.
No, it wasn't speeding. It was
on speed.
The loud exhaust.
Flipping off a speed camera.
And three Scottsdale cops pulled me over, and then they all wanted to look at the Hellcat I had, because it was right when the Hellcats
came out. Oh, shit. Yeah.
So, you know, but other since then, no, nose has been clean. Started working for that other treatment center. And then that's when I came into contact with ARC. ARC was just kind of starting out at the time, and they wanted us to come over and do their admissions and their marketing. And I've been here since July 2018.
All right.
You know, and I remember when there was like hardly, when I first came here, there was, it was kind of like a ghost town. Yeah. You know, we didn't have very many admits at the time.
That's crazy. When I started working here, I felt like it was like a ghost town. I can't remember what it was like when you were here, when you first came. The census must have been, I don't even remember. What was the census? Do you remember?
15 people maybe in RTC.
That's crazy.
That's nuts, man.
Man.
You know, but it was just, you know, that was, I think they had been open just a year when I came over.
Did you ever think that you would be doing this type of work as a career?
No. I wanted to be a race car driver.
Vroom.
Fuck yeah.
Hell yeah.
I'm just kidding.
Zim zim.
I fucking hate NASCAR.
Zim zoo.
What
about Formula 1?
I can't even
yeah,
tell
I was
gonna you.
Yeah, I'm thinking of F1.
You know, I wanted to be before I started using drugs and stuff like that, like an undercover officer.
Yeah?
Just like my dad. But then stuff changed, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I know you're also married to Michelle, who works here as well. And how has this experience been for you, man? The years that you have been involved in this recovery field, do you feel like it's helped you a lot with a lot of the things that the traumas and stuff?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's a daily reminder of why I'm not doing what I used to do, right?
Yeah.
And I think because the mind is such a powerful place that I need to be around that all the time.
Constantly.
You know, because otherwise I'm going to forget.
Yeah.
And my mind's going to start telling me, oh, hey, you can just smoke a little bit of meth and be okay. Because I'm not seeing the damage and things that it's doing. Mm-hmm. Drugs do, right?
Yeah.
Here I get to see that, and then I get to see the change in these people and then make things better for themselves. You know, but I also get to see them come in where they're just flat on their ass, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. This is their last stop, you know, and that's a reminder for me. Because mine's a quick thing, right? Things can be, I see a lot of people relapse and bad things happen when things are going good, mm-hmm. when things are going bad, right?
Yeah.
You know, so you got to be, you know, tip top on your toes, bro.
Well, that's what they always say, like the, you know, the drugs don't discriminate. It doesn't matter, you know, what your situation is, you know, color of your skin, the fucking ideals that you believe in, mm-hmm. that fucking shit will get you anyone. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Yeah. Well, I remember early on back in AA when I had to go, my dad would drop me off. This old guy used to tell me all the time, he's like, your disease is doing push-ups out in the parking lot.
He would just stare at you and say that shit?
He would tell me right next, you know, he'd yeah. lean over and say it to me because I always sit by him when I go, and he would just tell me that every time. And, you know, first few times I'm like, what the fuck? Is there drugs out there?
How many can he yeah, do in a row?
But then it started making sense, right? Yeah. Like, doesn't matter what I'm doing, that shit is constantly just waiting for me to slip up so it can slide in.
Yep.
That's crazy.
The only thing it cares about is you getting high.
And then staying high.
Yep.
Is my responsibility.
Exactly.
And how is
high,
that?
I will stay high.
And how is it, you know, if you don't mind me asking, you know, like within like your marriage with Michelle, I don't know if she's in recovery or not, but do you feel like that dynamic of has helped both of you guys kind of grow too, like in your relationship?
Yeah. I mean, she's a normie, right? Like she gets to take a 5 milligram, 325 pain pill after a small surgery or something and gets zonked out.
Yeah.
And she's done for the day. You know, I was to take that, I'd be eating the whole bottle and then I'd be out
looking for more.
Yeah. Doing whatever. Like it doesn't put, that. Yeah. You know, so it, a very different dynamic right now. Now, personally for me and her, we look at things different.
Yeah.
We look at work different. We look at people different. We look, you know, it's everybody has, like I said, it bounces back to perception again, you know. And I think the relationship that her and I have is where I can sit and listen to what she has to say, not be thinking of a response, and appreciate what she has to say.
That's cool,
right? You know what I mean? And I think meeting people later on in life when you're actually ready, because I was never ready to have a relationship. I didn't know how to be in one. I didn't know how to treat anybody, even though I thought I did. It was always about, you know, your buddy. Oh, that girl you're with, she's a 12. You know, good job, pat on the back. You know, and you're like, now it's like, why did I give a shit what everybody else thought?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What she looked like or what she drove or how much money she made or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, that's not what relationships are. Relationships are also not easy. Mm-hmm. You know, friendships. I mean, it takes work to be friends with people, let alone when you're in a marriage, you're on a contractual binding document here that through thick and thin, sickness and in health, right, that you are going to do what's in the best interests of that person as well.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I had been selfish for so long that sometimes I'm too selfless. And I forget about taking care of me too, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Totally. It's a fine line before you start to serve others so much that like you lose who you are mm-hmm. in the process.
You know, because what makes it the best type of relationship that I've read, you know, and I've read a shit ton of stuff on relationships because I want to have a good one, and I do. But it's taken time for me to get there because it takes both people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But what I've read is that you have this person, and then you have your togetherness. Because if you can't lose yourself in this person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And this person can't lose themselves in you, mm-hmm. right? They got to be two people solely by themselves, but are sharing a life together.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Right? It makes sense to me now.
Yeah.
Well, it's just how like in high school, people will be like, it's 50-50. No, yeah. It's two whole people.
No,
like,
sometimes it's 100 on their part mm-hmm. when I'm giving zero.
Yep.
Sometimes it's 100 on my part when they're giving zero.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Right. And then you get some 50-50 and then you got some 25-75
to fill that yep. gap. When yeah.
Because nothing
struggles.
Is ever perfect mm-hmm. because whoever says things are perfect is full of shit.
Yeah, it's true.
You know, and it's all about all those things that I thought I knew and I thought I wanted to be and how I would act and all that aren't the truth for me today.
Mm-hmm.
Still very hard for me to be loving. I show my love by taking care of things for her, you know, things like that, doing things and gifts and
acts of service,
mm-hmm. you know.
That's a love language, huh?
It is a love language. Yeah. You know, gift giving.
Yeah.
Yep. But, you know, I'm not a cuddler, even though, you know, sometimes she needs that.
Yeah.
Like those are like things you're supposed to do in relationships, right? You're supposed to do what that other person needs too sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Can't always just do what you want.
Yeah.
If you're going to just do what you want, you might as well just be single.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I mean, I think that's over the years of just figuring out who you are and what's the best version of you and how are you going to put that out there?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
You know, and does the good outweigh the bad? But every day is different.
Yeah.
You know, there's been challenges working together, of course. Sometimes, you know, because sometimes people see different things. You know, I see things different than she does. She thinks sees different than I do. But that's the beauty of it.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Yep. Absolutely. And I mean, you guys are both learning off of each other, too. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to be open-minded and soften yourself a little bit to be able to learn things from her perspective and vice versa.
And she has lost people in... She's lost people that have to addiction.
Yeah.
Sorry, I was losing train of thought. But, you know, she has lost people close to her.
Yeah.
You know, because of alcohol and prescription drugs. So she understands. And I think in the beginning, it was very scary for her. Still is. She hates it when I bring up, you know, like being in jail or this or that. You know, she just like, doesn't. I don't want to hear it. Well, that's one time I was, you know, shackled and handcuffed and this and
hogtied
and
hogtied on a spigot,
the spit thing put on my head and all that shit, like, cause I, and she just hates it. She doesn't like to hear those things, you know, and hey, that's who I used to be, you know. It's part of my story. You know, makes me who I am today. All that bad shit with the good shit makes who's sitting right here right now. That's you know, and we can't pick and choose and only give the good stuff. Because you want to be close to somebody and you want to know somebody intimately, you got to know the goods and the bads.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. You know.
That's so true. That's so true. And it even makes sense what you said, how you said, like, you were so selfish at one point in your life that now you have a hard time because you're so selfless by helping other people. Because you said earlier in the podcast that you hated that person that you were. Mm-hmm. You hated it. And I think that comes when you feel that way about disgust. That's why, like with liars, it's the same way. I used to lie all the time. And now it's like I get so offended when somebody lies to me type of shit.
And then it's like you got to sit there and think, well, they're in that space.
Yeah.
You know, and that's just where they're at right now.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't like it. But, hey, I used to do it all the fucking time.
Yeah, for real.
You know, and it's crazy because we were talking about the marriage thing and in sickness and in health. In the past few years, I've struggled with... I was never like sick when I was using and stuff. And in the past few years, I've had like neck surgery. I've had a couple broken things. I had some weird shit with the booster COVID shot, right? Like constantly in and out of the hospital, them not figuring shit out, you know, not feeling well. And she's had to deal with that, you know. And as I look at it, as it's easy for someone to be like, well, you're just going to be sick all the time. I could just turn around and leave. You know, that shit starts creeping up sometimes, you know, and it's like, I mean, shit, I got to have surgery on my bicep. I just tore my bicep 2 weeks ago when, you know, we're out on the boat and it rips and I get in the boat and I'm fucking yelling because I'm mad because it's just like another thing I got to deal with. And she's like, well, you need to go to the hospital. And I'm like, we're fucking out here surfing right now.
We're having a good time. Yeah. We're not going in.
We're not going in, you know, and it's like. You know, and then we go in a little later and fucking I go and she's like, are you going to go to the hospital? And I'm like, I'm going to buy a new truck first. And then I'm going to pick up Rain, my daughter. And then I'll probably stop by the hospital after I get her. So about 7 or 8 hours after I tore it, me and my daughter pull into the hospital, you know, and it was kind of nice because I'm like, I can take you home because I'm going to be here for a while. She's like, no, I'll spend time with you. And we got to talk about a lot of stuff, you know, and spend time and laugh and, you know, whatever. And
embarrass her.
No, because she's going to school for nursing. She's almost done with her RN. And
that's
so, you know, she's sitting there telling me this. And I'm like, wow, maybe I'll get a hot nurse. And she's like, you know, you're going to get an old lady. Sure as shit, we get an old dude.
Even better.
As the nurse. And, you know, and she's like, telling me, just like my wife would be telling me to tell him, make sure you tell him this. And I'm like, you better just shut up or you can go wait in the truck, you know. And then they come over and they're usually not very nice to me because they think I'm med seeking, even though I didn't ask for anything and I didn't ask for no pain meds or no nothing. And they're usually kind of rude. And the one doctor lady walked away and Rain's just like, what a bitch. You know, and I was just, she's like, I'm gonna, and I'm just like, oh well, just I'm used to it,
man.
You know, but you know, it's just funny to see just different things and be present. Like Michaela was talking, being able to be present and everything that happens.
Nothing
you know?
Quite like hospital family bonding. No.
And you know what's funny is hearing you even say, like, you know, Michelle, Michelle's had to deal with that for the last, you know, couple years or whatever, but. I just remember a couple weeks ago you had to leave the wedding early for Chris because you went to go take care of Michelle. So it's vice versa,
bro. Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
No, I get it.
You know who Matt looks like, dude? And it just hit me was Kratos from God of War.
Oh yeah,
dude,
you look like Kratos, bro.
That's Matt's boy, dude.
That's what Bubba, my son. He always him and Rain tell me that.
Really? That's like funny. Kratos.
Now, for the longest time, I was like, who the hell's that? He's like, God of War, Dad, that game I fucking play all the time. And I was like, oh, I wish.
That's
dude
crazy.
Looks like he kills motherfuckers.
Yeah. Hell yeah, dude. Oh, yeah. That's what you look like, man. You just need that scar right there.
All right, let's do it.
Like a bunch of like you can get some of that zinc fucking sunblock from Ross so you have that white tint to your skin. Oh, yeah. He's got kind of like that ashy, like white pasty.
Yeah.
With the, I don't. I
no, I'm saying.
I got olive colors.
No, exactly. But I'm saying.
That's why you need the zinc.
The God of War dude does. No, he has like a weird, like white paint kind of like on him.
I'm going to show you right now when we finish.
Yeah, I have no idea.
He looks just like him.
No, dude. I mean, working here has been a great thing for me. I love my job. I love the people that I work with. Honestly, I do. So,
got
I mean,
a good team.
Great team, and I think you know, takes time to build that. And I also think you're only as good as your team when you are an upper management. And it's like I've been blessed, you know, to
it's Kratos right there, bro. Halloween. That's right. Your next Halloween outfit.
I can't even tell you the last time I dressed up. Yeah, we'll go back to the opening gifts. I will not dress up either.
No.
Oh, I will get down.
We know that you like to open presents and dress up.
No, I get,
you know,
like, I don't like
he goes home and dresses.
I don't like the attention.
Yeah.
Me and Michelle get on the Harley and drive up for like bike week, you know, up in Cave Creek, and I will park way the fuck away. And she's like, you got a beautiful custom built bike. Why don't you? And I'm like, I don't want motherfuckers talking to me about my shit. Yeah. I'll park around all these veins.
He's just, he rolls up on it, but he just has like a bag over the outside of it. Yeah. Like a trash bag, like that just drapes over the
only
bike so
me.
You can't see. It's like,
that's funny.
Yeah.
All the tattoos and all this, and you just don't want attention. And I'm like, no, that's what's weird, huh?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Yeah, that's funny too. And then you were talking about the Hellcat earlier. The cops probably don't even like really want to give you a ticket, but they have to. And then they also want to know about your car.
Yeah, they're all searching my car. Can we look around your car? I'm like, yeah, sure. Back in the day, I'd have been like, fuck no.
Is this like
my lawyer?
Are you just looking around or is this like a you're
search
looking around,
seizure.
Searching my car?
What the fuck's up with this Belgian Malinois? Get it the fuck out of here.
Oh, man. Well, that's super cool, dude. And I mean, like, the fact that you're even here, what are some of your goals now that you are here in this space? Like, what are some of the things you would like to do here?
To do here at ARC?
Yeah, just in general, being in this recovery space now.
Well, I mean, I just want to continue, and I know this sounds cliche or stupid, but to be a better person each day. I want to do something better today than I did yesterday.
That is a correct answer, sir.
You know? Oh, I was like, what sound is that?
Yeah, I know. Bob, I never use it. I just wanted to bring
Bob
it up.
Saget, you're up.
Bob Saget. So, man, that's cool, dude.
No, I know it sounds dumb, but it is. I like, and it's like we go out on the boat every weekend, you know, and took my daughter and a couple of her girlfriends out the other week, and it's like I wasn't able to do anything. And I'm like, my wife's like, aren't you getting bored? And I'm like, no, I enjoy watching everybody else have fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And enjoy
these
things. Not everybody gets to own a boat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and not everybody gets to own certain things that I'm in the position to right now. Right now, we've talked about the material shit, and the material shit can just leave tomorrow.
Yeah.
And I'll still be okay. I mean, it's fun to have, but if I don't have it, I don't have it. I ain't gonna cry and whine. Yeah. It doesn't make me who I am.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I love to watch people have fun, you know, and smile and laugh and, you know, cause we've been miserable for so long.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, someone's laughing when you're getting high. You're like, what the fuck's going on? What's wrong with you?
You fucking making fun of me?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Making fun of me?
Fucking talking about me, Dustin?
Get the fuck out of here, man.
You know, but I don't, I guess I don't have any goals.
Hell yeah.
I'm on that river. I'm on that river now. Instead of swimming upstream, I'm just on that tube floating down.
Down, yeah.
Like enjoying things.
Heck, you know, yeah, man.
Instead of being
worried
about it.
And can stop and enjoy when needed.
Yeah.
Stop and enjoy
when
needed.
Smell the roses.
Or paddle through faster if needs to.
Or just piss right there.
Yeah.
I didn't have to get up.
Yep.
You know, it's so cool to me. Like, I'm curious to know how it is raising, you know, a young woman, especially knowing, like, what that situation, because I know with me and my pops, bro, like, now that I have my little son, it's just such a special feeling to know that you could feel that, you know, that thing that you didn't have in yourself. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, you know what I'm saying? Because, like, when my son did not have, like for me, I didn't have my pops.
Yeah.
Right? So for me, I have my son there, and it's just, like, a special connection because I see those emotions. And I've told you before, there's little things that he does that kind of remind me of Matt a little bit, right? He gets aggravated or whatever. Like, there's just little things that he does. But I always think, I'm like, I wonder like how it would be if I wasn't in the picture type of thing. And I wonder, like, not being raised by your mom, but raising a little girl, like, especially now that you're in her life, like, that's got to be a special
thing.
Well,
see, here's the thing is like, I don't ever take credit for my kids because I really wasn't around as when they were growing up and young.
Yeah.
Right? You know, and I have a lot of guilt and shame for that. But over the last 13 years, I've got to, they, you know, since she'd been 11, my son would have been 9, you know, they got better me. And I've gotten better every year since, right? Like, and I have a relationship and I have this discussion with them sometimes and tell them about how I feel about things sometimes. And yeah. They're always like, Dad, you were a great dad and you still are a great dad. You know, it's never, they never say anything different, but in my mind, I know.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so I don't like sit there and think of it as like that. I think of it, how fucking lucky I am that like they don't use drugs.
Yeah, absolutely.
That, you know, Rain is the type of woman she is. She's married, right? She got married a couple years ago to a kid that they've been dating since they were like 12 years old.
Wow.
You know, and this kid is, my son-in-law is like the bomb. I love that kid. Like, he's my own. And he's the greatest. You couldn't ask for a better, you know, that's son-in-law cool. for that. Cause I know he means everything he does for Rain and takes care of her and, you know, and she takes care, you know what I mean? Like, yep. Just that relationship they have. My toxicity that they saw when it came to relationships, she doesn't have any of that in hers. That's a great feeling, right? And my son, all he's into is, you know, he's in the Navy. All he's into is going to the gym and working. And it's like, oh, Dad, I'm in the 1,000-pound club now. I'm a buck 90 now.
Damn.
You know, I'm eating Arby's every day after a post-workout meal because you said that's good. You know, you know?
He's hitting 1,000 pounds right now?
That 1,000-pound club. So that's total your bench, your squat, and your deadlift.
Damn, good for you, bro. If you're listening, keep pushing, man.
Well, it's not live crazy yet, so we can't hear it.
You know, and then he, you know, he'll when I get back, we're going to fist fight. And I'm just like, okay. You know,
like, not with my.
I want to be able to fuck you.
No, I'll still fuck him up.
Yeah, there you
it's
go.
Like my dad, I'm like, I ain't fist fighting him. He's got to learn. He's going to learn, right?
That's funny.
But, you know, so they're not struggling with that part.
Yeah.
You know, they don't feel no abandonment.
Yeah.
You know, stuff like that. They don't have any of that kind of like trauma, but I think they still have a little bit. One story from my daughter when I remember she was 5. I got to go pick up her and Bubba. I was driving my dad's car. She was in her car seat. He was in a car seat. And I look in the rearview mirror and she's just crying. And I'm like, what are you crying for? And she's like, there's a policeman behind us. And they're going to take you into jail.
Oh, man.
You know, and I was like, oh. So I knew some of it's there, right? Yeah. And she has struggles with anxiety and stuff. And I know that's partly probably from shit I've done, you know. But other than those things, dude, like, I don't know how I'm so blessed when it comes to that part.
It's awesome, man.
I do have a younger daughter, but I don't get to see her. She just turned 16 and, you know,
yeah,
is what it is.
So what advice, Matt, would you give somebody, brother, like that's feeling like how you did at that moment when you were at your lowest? Is there an advice that you could give somebody to help them out of that? Or is it something they got to do on their own?
You know, I mean, they're going to figure it out. But I mean, if you're sitting there feeling like that continuously, there's so many people that you could probably turn to. I mean, I knew people in the programs. You know where treatment centers are. I don't care if you come here or somewhere else. Reach out for help and just start that process, get a feeling of how it is to be clean and sober for a minute, mm-hmm. right? Like, reach out, don't keep it bottled up.
Yeah.
And just try something different. Because I think we all get stuck in that pattern, right?
Yeah.
And that pattern never gets any different. It just gets deeper and deeper. My dad used to tell me all the time, son, just put the shovel down. Stop mm-hmm. digging. Mm-hmm. Fuck you. What do you know? You know, next thing you know, I'm in Tokyo. Yeah. You know, but it's like simple stuff like that, you know, because there's always somebody knows what you're going through and has been there. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You just got to let somebody know you're there.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, man. Thank you so much. And, you know, ladies and gentlemen, give it up, man, to our homeboy Matt, man. He came through. That is what's up. You know, this is always a blessing, man. This has been an amazing day being able to get to sit here and get closer with all of my homies in here in the R-Cast. And, you know, for everyone.
We had the AC on, too.
Yeah, we had the AC on. We're normally all tired and fucking sweaty. Sunken in by the end of the
swamp
by
ass.
The end of the swamp ass.
But hypoglycemic. I passed out.
Diabetes. Zane.
I know. Dustin was all comfortable too. At one point, you were chilling. I was like, bro, he's about to crash out. He's so comfortable on this chair. But nah, man, thank you guys so much for listening to all of the listeners out there. I hope you guys enjoyed that series. We're going to continue and keep pushing it. If you want to join us on the R-Cast, make sure you hit us up on the show notes in the episode. You can hit us up and we'll get you scheduled here ASAP. For everyone else, have an amazing rest of your week. Much love. God bless you guys. Be safe and we'll see you on the next one. Peace. What's going on, everybody? This is Buddha from the R-Cast, and I just wanted to thank you for checking out this week's episode. It means a lot, and if you could share it with a friend or a loved one, somebody you need in recovery, or maybe somebody who just needs that little bit of extra positivity in their life, we'd greatly appreciate it. If you would like to join us here on the R-Cast, either in the studio live or online, hit us up. The links are down in the show notes of this episode, and on there, you can find direct links to our main website here at America's Rehab Campus and all of our social media platforms. Follow us! We keep the posts positive and motivational, focused on recovery, health, and wellness. As you know, in this modern day and age, we need as much love as possible, y'all. And as always, if you or somebody you know is in need of substance abuse treatment, please don't hesitate to give us a call. We're open 24 hours a day, and our direct phone number is 1-833-272-7342. Once again, that phone number is 1-833-272-7342. I hope you all have a beautiful rest of your day. Much love, and God bless. Peace.